mostly what we do is they go to his deathbed and then do some chanting, talking to him about Dhamma and something like that. Or sometimes we ask him to do some dana, some giving, like offering a flower to the Buddha or offering some food or something to the monk or something like that. So these are the four kinds of another set of four kinds of karma. Then the next, another full classification of karma is this: productive, consolidating, frustrating, and supplanting. Four kinds of karma. Now, what is called productive is both profitable and unprofitable. So kusala and akusala both. It produces the material and resultant immaterial aggregates. Preset resultants there. Resultant immaterial aggregates, both at rebirth and during the course of an existence. Both at the moment of rebirth and then later in the later life. Consolidating karma cannot produce result, but when result has already been produced in the provision of rebirth thinking by other karma, it consolidates the pleasure or pain that arises and makes it last. So it is supporting karma. And when result has already been produced in the provision of rebirth thinking by other karma, frustrating karma frustrates and obstructs the pleasure or pain that arises and does not allow it to last. So it is, very God, obstructing, frustrating karma. These two are opposite to each other, the second and the third. So the last one is supplanting karma. It's itself both profitable and unprofitable, and it supplants other weaker karma, prevents its resulting, and usurps that karma's opportunity in order to cause its own result. But when the opportunity has thus been furnished by the karma, not other, so let's rub out the other, furnished by the karma, I mean by it, result is said to have arisen. So we should change to its result is said to have arisen. That means when it has furnished the opportunity to the other karma, see, to give results, then it is said to have arisen. So these are another four kinds of karma: productive, consolidating or supporting, frustrating, and supplanting. Now, in actual practice of meditation, one may not see all these karma. So that is why in the Dika, in the commentary to this, it is said, because it is the speciality of Buddha and because it is the province of the knowledge that is not shared by disciples, it is called not shared by disciples. So this kind of understanding, exactly understanding or seeing the karma and its results, is not shared by disciples. So disciples cannot know all the working of the karma, only the Buddhas know. So we have three sets of karmas, right? So it's important to understand these, if you want to know about karma in Buddhism. The succession of karma and its result in the 12 classes of karma is clear in its true nature only to the Buddha's knowledge of karma and its result, which knowledge is not shared by disciples. But the succession of karma and its result can be known in part by one practicing insight. So not all of them will be known by a meditator, but some of them will be. That is why this explanation of difference in karma shows only the mere headings. And this is how one man discerns mentality, materiality by means of round of karma and round of karma result, applying this 12-fold karma classification to the round of karma. So this is how a yogi sees the mind and matter by means of round of karma and round of karma result. When he has thus seen by means of the round of karma and round of karma result, how mentality, materialities, occurrences, due to a condition, he sees that as now, so in the past. That is induction. So he infers from what he sees, the conditionality of what he does not see, that is the formation in the past and also formations in the future. So in the past, its occurrence was due to a condition by means of the round of karma result, and that in the future, its occurrence will be due to a condition by means of the round of karma results. Now, this is karma and karma result. I think we should say, there is karma. It is how he descends. There is karma and karma result, the round of karma and the round of karma result, the occurrence of karma and occurrence of karma result, the continuity of karma and continuity of karma result, action and the fruit of action. Karma result proceeds from karma. Result has karma for its source. Future becoming springs from karma, and this is how the world goes round. And when he sees thus, he abandons all his uncertainty, that is to say, the 16 kinds described in the way beginning, was I in the past? This is paragraph 6. So when he sees the karma and karma results clearly, then he abandons all uncertainty or doubt with regard to whether he has been in the past or in the future and so on. So the 16 kinds of doubt can be overcome by discerning the conditionality of mentality and materiality. So this is the correct view. So there is no doer apart from karma and its result. And these passages and these verses are often quoted by many authors when they wrote about the karma and its results. So there is no doer of a deed or one who reaps the deed's result. Phenomena alone flow on. No other view than this is right. So in ultimate analysis, there is no doer of a deed, just the deed, and no one who reaps the result of the deed or result of the karma. Just pure phenomena flow on. No other view than this is right. And so while karma and result thus causally maintain their round, as seed and tree succeed in turn, no first beginning can be shown. That's very good. So we cannot say that this is the first karma or the first cause. Because like a seed and tree, there can be no beginning. Nor in the future round of births can they be shown not to occur. Sectarians, not knowing this, have failed to gain self-mastery. They assume a being, see it as eternal or annihilated, adopt the 62 wrong views. These 62 wrong views are mentioned in the first discourse of Diga Nikaya, collection of wrong discourses. So in that sutta, the 62 kinds of wrong views are mentioned. Adopt the 62 wrong views, each contradicting one another. The stream of craving bears them on, caught in the meshes of their views. And as the stream that bears them on, they are not free from suffering. A monk, disciple of the Buddha, with direct knowledge of this fact, can penetrate this deep and subtle void conditionality. There is no karma in result, nor does result exist in karma. Though they are void of one another, there is no fruit without the karma. As fire does not exist inside the sun, a gem, cow dung, nor yet outside them, but is brought to be by means of its component parts. So neither can results be found within the karma, nor without. Nor does the karma still persist in the result it has produced. The karma of its fruit is void, no fruit exists yet in the karma, and still the fruit is born from it, wholly depending on the karma. For here there is no Brahma, God, creator of the round of rebirths. Phenomena alone flow on, cause and component, their condition. So the correct view about karma and result is that they are two different things, and karma is not existent in, the fruit is not existent in karma, and it is not that the karma gradually ripens into fruit. Karma is one thing and the result is another. They are connected just as karma and result. And then the full understanding of the known. That means if a person understands this way, then he has got the full understanding of the known. There are three kinds of full understanding, and they will be explained in the next chapter. And then the explanation of karma and its results being one not identical with the other. And in the similes, furthermore, just as while the recitation from the teacher's mouth does not enter into the pupil's mouth, yet recitation does not, because of that, fail to take place in the pupil's mouth. And while the potion drunk by the proxy does not enter the sick man's stomach, yet the sickness that does not, because of that, fail to be cured. That is strange. Huh? A potion drunk by proxy does not enter the sick man's stomach, yet the sickness does not, because of that, fail to be cured. You take the medicine and I get free from disease, right? But here, in the Visuddhimagga itself, it has something to do with witchcraft, something. Say you recite the mantra, and then you take the potion, so and then other person gets cured, something like that. So I think that there was belief like that in olden days, and also in maybe even in the present time, some people believe in that. So while the potion drunk by the proxy does not enter the sick man's stomach, yet the sickness does not, because of that, fail to be cured. And while the arrangement of ornaments on the face does not pass over to the reflection of the face in the looking glass, yet the arrangement of the ornaments does not, because of that, fail to appear. Here, arrangement of ornaments, the Pali word is mandana vidana. So it does not necessarily mean ornament. Can I say the applying what do you call that? Makeup is that supposed to be an ornament?
I think ornaments usually you think of something attached,
like
earrings would be an ornament, something that would be an appendage or attached.
But I think here what is meant here is not necessarily the ornaments like earrings, but say you apply powder or something to your face, and then you look in the glass and they appear in the glass. And while the flame of a lamp does not move over from one wick to another, yet the flame does not, because of that, fail to be produced, so too, and so on and so on. And then the verses. Just as eye consciousness comes next, following on mind element. That means before the eye consciousness, there is what is called, what's that? Before eye consciousness. Before seeing consciousness. Panchadwara vajana. Five sense door adverting consciousness. And that is called here mind element. So that means there is mind element, and when this appears, then eye consciousness arises. Which, though it does not come from that, though it is not the continuation of the mind element, yet fails not next to be produced. To be produced means to arise or to take place. So too in rebirth linking, consciousness continually takes place. So when there is rebirth, this is a continuity of consciousness. So death consciousness is one consciousness, and rebirth consciousness is another consciousness. So in rebirth consciousness immediately follows death consciousness. So there is no interval. So the prior consciousness breaks up, that means death consciousness. The subsequent is born from death. Do you like the word from? On the previous page, which, though it does not come from death, right? So here, from should be collected after. It is clearly stated in the sub-commentary that after death means immediately after death consciousness. So we should say this: the subsequent is born after death. That means it arises after breaking up of the death consciousness. They have no interval between. So there is no interval of time between death consciousness and rebirth consciousness. So a person may be reborn miles away. So with regard to distance, there may be a great gap, say 100 miles away or 1,000 miles away. So a man who dies in Burma may be reborn in America. But in time, there is no interval. So there is no interval between, no gap that separates the two. While not whatever passes over, still rebirth living comes about. Once, King Milena asked about that. How come a person who was born, say, about 100 miles from here, or 1,000 miles from here, and you said there is no time gap between death consciousness and rebirth consciousness. Then the Venerable Nagasena said, "O great king, think about one city. Let's say, think about San Francisco." Then he said, "Yes, I have thought about San Francisco." Then he said, "Think about Los Angeles. Which takes longer to think about Los Angeles and to think about San Francisco?" No difference in time, right? So with that simile, the Venerable Nagasena convinced King Milena. So there is no gap between death in one life and rebirth in another, following life. So they have no interval between, no gap that separates the two. While not whatever passes over, still rebirth living comes about. I think you remember the simile is given in the chapter on dependent origination. You remember the similes? The echo, and the seal, and the lamp. The lamb is the similarity of lamb is given here too. Nothing goes from this life to next life, but next life is not altogether disconnected, has nothing to do with this life. So that is how we understand connection between the present life and then future life, or past life and the present life. Okay, then that the last paragraph. When a man practicing insight has become possessed of this knowledge of the conditionality of things, he has found comfort in the Buddha's dispensation. He has found a foothold. He is certain of his destiny. He is called a lesser stream enterer. So this is called, in Pali it is called Chula Sotapanna. Chula means smaller or lesser. So he is not a real Sotapanna, real stream winner, but he is like a stream winner because he has found a foothold, he has found comfort in the Buddha's dispensation, and he is certain of his destiny. That means he will not be reborn in four woeful states. Certain of destiny means that. Will not be reborn in four woeful states. So he is called a lesser stream enterer. Now, one thing to understand about this is, he will not be reborn in hell, or he is certain of his destiny, only if he does not fall away from this knowledge. Sometimes a person may reach this stage of knowledge, and later on he gives up meditation and he falls away from it. So such a person is not certain of his destiny. So to be certain of his destiny, he must have this knowledge intact with him, especially say when he dies. So a man possessing this kind of knowledge is certain of destiny means now possessing. So he must really possess, say all the time or until the moment of death. So if he loses this knowledge because he no longer meditates or he follow it into bad things, bad actions, then he cannot be certain of his destiny. So we always say to meditators or to people, if you cannot become a real Sotapanna, just try to become a lesser Sotapanna, I mean a lesser supreme enterer. Okay, then next is the chapter on the knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path. The knowledge established by getting to know the path and not path thus. This is the path, this is not the path, is called purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path. Now, when a person practices meditation, say when he advances to different stages, so when he reaches a certain stage, there arise in him some kind of illumination, or he feels elation, or sometimes his meditation or practice is very good, and so on. So this will be explained later. When they arise, a meditator takes them to be enlightenment. And if he takes them to be enlightenment, he will not practice anymore. And so he will not gain enlightenment at all. So these are called impediments. These impediments are a block to his progress or to his enlightenment. So if he takes them to be the way, to be the path to the enlightenment, then he is wrong. He will not get enlightenment at all. So he must understand that these are not the path to enlightenment. The path to enlightenment is to go further and to see the impermanence, suffering and soulless nature of things. So a yogi must be able to see this is correct and this is incorrect, or this is the path to enlightenment and this is not the path to enlightenment. So this chapter deals with this. Before coming to these impediments, he must do some contemplation. So the different kinds of contemplations are mentioned in this chapter. So one who desires to accomplish this should first of all apply himself to the inductive insight called comprehension by groups. That means comprehending not in detail one by one, but taking as a group, taking materiality as one group, and then contemplate on it and so on. So it is called inductive insight or comprehension by groups. So these two names are used in India and in Sri Lanka, and that is what is said by the common commentary. So you have the footnote down there. This, it seems, is a term used by the inhabitants of Jambudipa. So comprehension by groups seems to be the term used by Indian teachers. And then However, insight into state by means of the method beginning any materiality whatever is inductive insight. This, it seems, is the term used by inhabitants of Dhammapanidipa, that means Ceylon. Okay. They mean the same thing, these two. Insight, inductive insight and comprehension by groups. They mean the same thing. But different teachers have different names for it. That is what he said to inductive insight called comprehension by groups. Why does he have to do comprehension by groups or inductive insight? Because knowledge of what is the path and what is not the path appears in connection with the appearance of illumination, etc. So they will be explained later. In one who has begun insight, for it is after illumination, etc., have appeared in one who has already begun insight that there comes to be knowledge of what is path and what is not the path. Because he must be able to decide that these are not the path, or these will not lead me to enlightenment, something like that. And comprehension by groups is the beginning of insight. Now please note this. Comprehension by groups is the beginning of insight. So this is the first knowledge in the list of vipassana knowledges. So before that, we are not in vipassana proper, right? So first we try to be mindful of whatever is at the present moment, and then later on we'll come to see mind and matter clearly, and then cause and conditions of mind and matter. So while we are doing these, we are not in the domain of vipassana proper. We have not yet gone into vipassana proper. Only when we come to the comprehension by groups do we enter into the real vipassana. So comprehension by groups is the beginning of insight. That is why it is set forth next to overcoming of doubt. Besides, knowledge of what is the path and what is not the path arises when full understanding as investigation is occurring. And full understanding as investigation comes next to full understanding as the norm. So this is also a reason why one who desires to accomplish this purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path should first of all apply himself to comprehension by groups. So he's explaining why a yogi has to do this inductive insight or comprehension by groups. Now there are three kinds of full understanding. Full understanding as the known, paragraph 3. Full understanding as the known, full understanding as investigating, and full understanding as abandoning. So these are the three kinds of full understanding. Then, on the next page, herein the understanding that occurs by observing the specific characteristic of such and such states thus, materiality has the characteristic of being molested, feeling has the characteristic of being felt, is called full understanding as the known. So, full understanding as the known is understanding the specific characteristics of things we observe. Now there are two kinds of characteristics, common or general characteristic and specific characteristic of everything we observe. So when we see the specific characteristics of the things we observe, then we are said to have this understanding as the known. Now, nama has the characteristic of bending towards the object. Rupa has the characteristic of being molested and so on. This is their specific characteristic. They do not share this characteristic with others. Say, the Rupa does not share the characteristic of being molested with Nama. And Nama does not share the characteristic of bending towards object with Rupa. So these are their specific characteristics. But both of them, or all conditioned things in the world have common characteristics, and they are impermanent, suffering, and soullessness. So when we see the specific characteristic of things, then we are said to have the full understanding as the known. And the understanding consisting in insight with the general characteristics as its object, that occurs in attributing a general characteristic to those same states and the way beginning, materiality is impermanent, feeling is impermanent, is called full understanding as investigating. So when we see the general characteristic of things, when we see the impermanent suffering and soulless nature of things, then we are said to have full understanding as investigating. And then the next one is the understanding consisting in insight with characteristics as its object that occurs as the abandoning of the perception of permanence, etc. In those same states is called understanding as abandoning. When we see, when we understand that something is impermanent, then we abandon the notion of permanence. When we see something as dukkha, suffering, then we abandon the notion of sukha and so on. So that is full understanding as abandoning. So they have different functions and different aspects. Now, the plane of full understanding as the known extends from the delimitation of formations, that means discriminating mind and matter, or seeing mind and matter clearly, up to the discernment of conditions, that means that mentioned in the last chapter. For in this interval, the penetration of the specific characteristics of states predominates. The plane here means the domain. So the domain of full understanding as known. And then the plane or domain of full understanding as investigation extends from comprehension by groups. Now this comprehension, up to contemplation of rise and fall. It will come later. For in this interval, the penetration of the general characteristics predominates. So during these stages, a yogi sees the general characteristic of things in impermanent and so on. The plane of full understanding as abandoning extends from contemplation of dissolution. So after seeing rising and falling, a yogi will see just the dissolution. So the contemplation of dissolution onwards. For from there onwards, the seven contemplations that affect the abandoning of the perception of impermanence, etc., predominate thus. So these are the seven kinds of contemplation. Contemplation, formation, contemplating formations as impermanent. A man abandons the perception of permanence, and so on. So these three kinds of full understanding we should know. And up to the end of last chapter, a yogi has achieved the full understanding as known. So after full understanding as known, then there must come full understanding as investigation. And for that purpose, the yogi has to do the inductive insight or comprehension as groups. Now, so of these three kinds of full understanding and so on. So now comprehension by groups, paragraph 6. How is it that understanding of defining past, future and present takes by summarization is knowledge of comprehension and so on? And this is the quotation taken from the Patisambhita Magga. So the brief thing to understand is, now, whenever the matter and the mental things are described, Buddha described them as belonging to present, past, future, as being internal, external, as being subtle and gross, as being far and near and so on. So by taking all materiality, whether past, future or present and so on, and then contemplating that materiality as impermanent, and this is a kind of comprehension. And he defines it as painful, and that is another comprehension. And he defines it as not self, it is another comprehension, and so on. And then, paragraph 9, herein the abbreviation, the I, etc., aging and death should be understood to represent the following sets of things and so on. So, in the previous quotations, we see mentality and materiality, and then feeling, perception, formation, consciousness, and so on. And then, what is not directly included in this quotation are given in chapter, paragraph 9. Here in the abbreviation should be understood to represent the following sets of things elided. So they are not mentioned in the quotation, but they should be understood as being included. So these are the stakes that organize the doors and so on. Many things. Now, one thing important is paragraph 12. The second part of paragraph 12. And as regards those that are amenable to comprehension, a beginning should be made by comprehending those among them that are obvious to and easily discernible by the individual or meditator. That is very important. When we meditate, we try, we must comprehend or we must be mindful of what is obvious, what is prominent, and what is easy to see. So we don't have to look for what is difficult to see. Simply, we cannot do this. So that is very important, this statement. So when we practice vipassana meditation, we take as object what is easy to see at that moment, what is obvious, what is prominent at that moment. That is why, although we are concentrating on the breath, if there is a noise loud enough, then we pay attention to that too. Because at that moment, it becomes more obvious, so easier to be mindful of. Now that is following this advice given in Visuddhimagga. And then comprehension by groups. Now, I hope you have read all these. So comprehension. Even matter can be comprehended in different ways. So it is impermanent in the sense of destruction, and then painful in the sense of terror, and not self in the sense of having no core. So this is how we contemplate the impermanent nature, suffering nature, and soulless nature of things. You may take any one of the matter, past, present, or future, internal or external, and so on, and then you define or you try to see that this is impermanent in the sense of destruction. That means it is destroyed or it dissolves itself after coming into existence, and so it is impermanent and so on. So impermanence in the sense of destruction, painful dukkha in the sense of terror, because it is fearful, when it is painful it is fearful, and not self in the sense of having no core, having no inner core. So when you concentrate like this, say, rupa is impermanent in the sense of destruction, then this is one kind of comprehension. But if you take rupa in different aspects, yes, and the rupa which is past is impermanent in the sense of destruction, rupa which is at present is impermanent in the sense of destruction, rupa which is which will be in the future is impermanent in the sense of destruction, and so on. In that way, you can contemplate in 11 ways on one rupa, because past, present, future, internal, external, subtle, gross, far, near, and then what else? They are mentioned here. So, in this way, you can contemplate in one way or in 11 ways. Painful in the sense of terror, the same thing, and not self in the sense of no core, also the same thing. Now, in paragraph 16, we'll have to make some change about the middle of the paragraph. For what is impermanent is painful, and it is impossible to escape the impermanence or the rise and fall and oppression of self. So how could it have the state of a doer, and so on. Here he misunderstood two words. So the correct translation should be for what is impermanent, right? So for that which is impermanent and painful, for that which is impermanent and painful is incapable of preventing even its own impermanence or oppression by rise and fall. That which is impermanent and painful is incapable of preventing even its own impermanence or oppression by rise and fall. So when you contemplate on the no-self nature of things, then you say that there is no self, no abhida, no doer, no experiencer, and so on. And also you contemplate like this. What is impermanent is painful, right? Whatever is impermanent is painful. And whatever is impermanent and painful is no-self. Because it is incapable of preventing its own impermanence and being oppressed by rising and falling. So that is the meaning here. He misunderstood the word Pali word Udiyabaya Pilana. He takes it to mean Udiyabaya one, Udiya one thing, Vaya one thing, and Pilana one thing. But here the meaning is, when you see the impermanence of things, first you see the arising and disappearing of things, right? Say something arises and disappears. When you see the arising and disappearance of things, you see the impermanence of things. And if when it is impermanent, it is oppressed by rising and falling. So you see that it is suffering or it is unsatisfactory. So that is the explanation for being dukkha. It is dukkha because it is oppressed. Oppressed by what? Oppressed by rising and falling. So when you practice meditation and you see things just coming and going, you clearly see this the dukkha nature of things. So not rise, fall and oppression, but oppression by rise and fall. That means being oppressed by rising and falling. So when you see things just rising and disappearing, say you see this the nature of suffering or being painful. So for that which is impermanent and painful is incapable of preventing even its own impermanence or oppression by rise and fall. So it is no self. Now, the word anatta has different meanings. The direct meaning is no self, right? And it implies that it cannot exercise any authority over things. So, insusceptibility to the exercise of authority is also the meaning of the word anatta. So when you want to see the anatta nature of thing, you see this way. This is impermanent and this is painful. And that which is painful and impermanent and painful is also no self. That means it cannot prevent itself from being impermanent. So there is no way of exercising authority over it. See, don't become impermanent or don't become painful, because it is by nature impermanent and painful. So it is incapable of preventing even its own impermanence and being oppressed. That's why it is not self, like that. So the same method applies to feeling and so on. Okay. And then the explanation of strengthening of comprehension of impermanence, etc., in 40 ways. So in 40 ways you try to see the mental and physical phenomena that is impermanent, painful, disease, a boil, a dart, a calamity, and so on. So in the 18th paragraph, the list is given, and in paragraph 19, the meaning of the words are given one by one. So there must be 40. So in that paragraph, in paragraph 19, about 1, 2, third line from the bottom, what do you see there? See, as a disaster because of bringing unforeseen and plentiful adversity, and because of, right? So instead of and, there should be as terror, because of being the basis for all kinds of terror. Otherwise you do not get 40.